fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas. We are on multiple radio stations all over the place and live streaming, podcasting, TV, however you watch or listen. It's always so great to have you along for the ride. What a show we have lined up today. It's going to be a big one, as Donald Trump likes to say.
And I think we're going to make it bigly.
That's just what we do each and every day here on this program. So welcome into it. It is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier. Bottom of the hour, Akash Shogali. He'll be joining us. He's the Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. Our great partners with us here on the radio show. We're going to talk with him about the Republican Party. We're going to have a kind of a generalized theme today. The Republican Party, what exactly is the platform of the Grand Old Party going into election season on economic issues? As you know, Bidenomics is failing us miserably. We have inflation that's ridiculously high. We have government spending that's ridiculously high. We have the Biden administration trying to bail out foreign governments and trying to bail out student loan debt. And you can fill in the blank on what they want to fill out, just try and bail out and spend money on and print money on. So what exactly is the Republican Party's platform, and are they fulfilling that promise to the American people? So we'll get with that with Akash coming up at the bottom of the hour. A lot of things to get to on the home front here, obviously, though. There was a headline, and we'll talk about it going into a little bit later, but the applications for federal student aid by senior high school students going into higher education dramatically low right now compared to what they usually are. So is that a surprise? Is it because of the political landscape? Is it because of activism? Or is it just because it's too damn expensive and we're sick and tired of spending ridiculous amounts of money for a degree that may or may not do us any justice moving forward? So that'll be a fun conversation. There's another one as well that kind of I never thought, I have to admit, I never in my lifetime. Now, again, I'm 35. I'm a millennial. Never thought I'd see this headline, where apparently there's a motion right now from some Republican senators urging the Biden administration to activate and mobilize National Guardsmen to protect Jewish students on college campuses. What? What? Good golly. So there's a lot to get to, obviously, from some of that and more. But I don't want to waste any time. I want to get right to our guest to kick off the program right out of the gate today.
What's going on in this world of mine? There's a whole lot of killing in this world of mine. Somebody's got to help this world of mine.
Obviously, the big news from the last few days, Washington, D.C. Right now, we are in, I don't know how many hours technically, but we are in day number one of their 30-hour debate on the Senate floor for foreign aid policy. That is for the passing of the Ukrainian funding bill. That is for Israeli funding. That is for the potential banning of TikTok here in the nation. That is for seizing assets from Russia. That is for Taiwan in fighting and pushing it back against China. So there's a major federal aid or foreign policy aid bill that's being discussed after the passing of that in the House of Representatives. Now, I've been beating it like a dead horse, I understand, but I still want to reiterate the fact that right now, Republicans, I ask you and pose you the question, have we forgotten our promise that Mike Johnson made all the way back when he became Speaker back in like November of last year, saying that we would not pass any foreign aid bills until we actually secure our border or at least pass some form of immigration bill here on the home front? And beyond that, let's take a look at Mike Johnson in particular as Speaker of the House. Now, he came in as a relatively low-ranking Republican from the House, but they had to dig deep in the pockets. And I said at the time that I was very proud of the Republican Party, that we could go that deep into the ranks and pull somebody out that actually had the values that Mike Johnson had. He was conservative, he was soft-spoken and courteous and polite, but yet he was stern and that he had his values and that he knew exactly what he was standing for. And we are very proud. And the party, for the first time in a very long time, seemed like we were united. Now, so many months later, not so much. We have Marjorie Taylor Greene advocating for the ousting of Mike Johnson from Speaker of the House. We have him working more so with Democrats. There was a headline today from Breitbart News as well that showed that he had actually apologized, meaning Mike Johnson, apologized for the eye rolls that he gave during the State of the Union address to the Biden administration. So now I ask you a new question. Is Mike Johnson trying to play both sides of the aisle too much because he's Speaker? Is the pressure too much, and is that making him compromise his conservative values? To talk about some of this and more, really happy to have on the program. It's been a while, a little bit since we've had had him on the show. He is the author of multiple books, including The DNA of Democracy, The Shadows of the Acropolis, and so much more. Really happy to have on here Mr. Richard Lyons. Richard, how are you, my friend?
Oh, very good, Andy. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's always great to chat with you. I love having you on, and it's a fascinating topic. I know you've written about this recently here, but Mike Johnson, I loved him when he came into the speaker. Yeah. He was uniting. He was a breath of fresh air. He was a solid conservative. And now it seems like he's starting to kind of waffle a little bit. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I think he's in between a rock and a hard place in that, you know, his majority is dwindling down to one vote. So we have to, I think, Andy, it helps to take a more of a 30,000-foot view. And the view is you have a Republican Party that is divided between conservatives and go-along Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have on the other side the Democrat Party, which controls the presidency, it controls the Senate, and it controls the administrative state. And that party has a designing principle that is one thing. We want more money. We want more power. We want socialism,
yeah.
Right? So they're very dedicated. All their numbers, they always vote as a block. In the Republican Party, you have a party that's divided against itself. So, in fact, you have this monolithic power in the Democratic Party that includes the administrative state, which is now the most powerful branch of government.
Sure.
And then you have the Republican Party, which is, you know, just divided down the middle. So we have to come up with a designing principle, and I think that principle, and I was very excited like you with Speaker Johnson when he assumed that seat, because he announced and pronounced all the original principles of our country. And I thought, wow, once he announces these principles, you know, the Republican Party will unify around him. Well, it hasn't, because you still have go-along Republicans, and he's actually ended up with them in order to get legislation passed. So it's kind of surprising.
It is very surprising. It was refreshing because, like you said, we had someone come out, and I was very skeptical. I understood why Matt Gaetz wanted to oust Kevin McCarthy. He was no fan of Republicans. He didn't fight for Republican values at all. So I understood it. But my concern then was, who else are we going to have to fill those ranks? And I was very right. pleasantly surprised with Mike Johnson. With that filling. But now, like you said, a one-vote majority, it essentially means that we are on the minority side of things as conservatives, because with the Republican Party being so broken now and working with Democrats more so than Republicans, that it's difficult to get him through. I will say, though, that Mike Johnson, the process that he has done on passing certain legislation, like our federal budget, for example, breaking it up into two separate pieces for the appropriations, yeah. and doing the continuing resolution for different times, then doing the same thing with the foreign aid policy bills here, breaking it into four different sections to debate each one of those individually, has been brilliant. I agree with what he's done for the most part. Do you think, however, that he's betrayed the promise that he made that we wouldn't pass foreign policy bills until we addressed immigration, which we just did?
Yes, I understand that perfectly. And there, I think the position is, and I know he has been in discussions with Donald Trump, is that they don't want to get into a position where Speaker Johnson and the Republican Party takes the government into a storm, like a government shutdown ahead of the election. I think he wants to do as much as he can before the election, hoping, and you know, we really need, Andy, every single person to vote. So we have a landslide election. So even as much as the Democrats cheat, we can still win. Yeah. I mean, that's a major problem. But I think he's doing what he can between now and the election to keep the ship steady so that Republicans at least look like they're governing responsibly, and even with the divide in his party.
That is very true. Why do you think that there's been so much of a, I guess, an exodus when it comes to Republicans leaving? The latest one being Mike Gallagher out of Wisconsin, now bringing it to that one. Yeah, that one vote majority, which, I mean, I get if you don't want to run for reelection. I mean, one of our congressmen here in Kansas, Jake LaTurner, just announced a couple days ago that he would not be running for reelection as well. But he's staying in there at least until November. But there's so many that not only have said, I'm not going to run for re-election, but boom, I'm out. Kevin McCarthy being one of those as of December, just I'm gone. Why are they just walking away without even completing a full term? I don't get it.
You know, Mike Gallagher, I grew up in Wisconsin, and I had the greatest admiration for him, and I'm I know you probably did. He was very erudite and very firm in all of his interviews with regard to Chinese, you know, the policy with China. And that shocked me very greatly. I have a worry that even, you know, the people of America and the people's representatives in the conservative / Republican Party don't understand how really profound this moment is.
Yeah.
The danger is that the Democrats have so much power now that they're in a position where they're not going to give up any of it. They're going to cheat with the election. They're going to create scandals wherever they can. They're going to investigate conservatives, you know, unconstitutionally in hopes of dirtying them up. The Democrat Party doesn't care about the economy. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about democracy. They care about power. And we need a conservative party that is the opposite of all that.
Yeah.
That works for the people and works for the Constitution.
Because of such, yeah, exactly. I mean, because of such the low numbers that we have, and because of so many Republicans, which the vast majority that I've seen that are just walking away, I think are the ones that were loyal to Kevin McCarthy, the establishment ones that are upset with the conservatives being such naysayers and trying to fight them, that they finally just given up, which is good news, I think, at the end of the day. Does that open up the opportunity, do you think, for better conservative candidates to jump into the race and win in November? Or are we so fractured right now that we could see even more progressive, quote-unquote, rhino Republicans take these seats?
No, I think, again, if you take a view, Andy, you know, from a little bit above the fray and look at trends instead of moments, this has been a shift since Trump took office. Do you remember how many Republicans were voicing opposition to Trump in 2016 and through his presidency? Now those voices are not there as much. You're hearing people back up Donald Trump, and I think there's becoming a shift to conservative values in the Republican Party, and we're losing rhino Republicans.
Yeah.
And so I think it is. I think eventually it will be a good thing. I think we really need everybody to be serious. We're at a national Y in the road between socialism and an adherence to our original principles.
Yeah.
And it's very historic. Everybody says every election, it's the biggest election of our lifetime. No, this one is.
This one is.
This one is.
Yeah, it always is at that time. And this one it definitely is fulfilling that promise as well. It's going to be one of the biggest ones, the biggest one that we've ever seen. And one of the most important ones that we've ever seen, because this is the teetering point that we've seen for a while. And it only gets more exacerbated at that time. We're talking with Richard Lyons, author of multiple books, including DNA of Democracy and Shadows of the Acropolis. You can find his website with all of his writings at richardclyons.com. Richard, we got to take a break here. Hang on the line. I want to continue this conversation when we come back. And I want to talk about this battle within the Republican Party, this Marjorie Taylor Greene push to oust Mike Johnson because he's not holding on to those conservative principles. Is it good? Is it bad for the Republican Party overall? Is it a necessary evil, essentially, where we have to hold our Republican Party in line or at least challenge them on the values that we say that we're promoting, even if we are trying to work as a unified chamber, so to speak, to make things happen? So we'll cover some of that when we come back right around the corner. It's a post-Monday celebration. Lots to get to here for The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. 24 minutes past the hour, radio, TV, live streaming, and podcasting. However you check us out, so wonderful to have you with us. By the way, I will be joining the Drew Thomas Allen Show that is on, what network is he on? Is he on Real America's Voices? Breitbart News, or is he on Newsmax? I don't remember one of the channels, but we'll be on his program on Friday. Make sure to don't miss that. That will be super awesome. Looking forward to chatting with him. Right now, we're hanging out with Richard Lyons, author of the book, The DNA of Democracy, also The Shadows of the Acropolis, talking about Mike Johnson, the Republican Party, the unity, the conservative uprising that we're about to see in this election, which I am very confident about. And you're right, Richard, that most of these people, the exodus that we've seen has been the rhino Republicans frustrated with the system and just don't want to deal because guess what? They can't go back to just normal business the way they used to behind the closed doors, just to be able to sue us and lie to us and just give us a little bit of the bones while they do whatever they want to. It's not working any longer. And that's why even then, and look, the beauty about the Republican Party is the fact that we have this very wide umbrella and that we do have different views. We don't have these marching orders that we get from the DNC like the Democrats do. They're super delegates with their elected officials telling them what they want as another elected official. We're the wicked, wild, free thinkers in D.C., which is good. So someone like Mike Johnson, who has been wavering, and it's somewhat understandable, like you said, because he's trying to lead a caucus, not lead an entire chamber, not shut down the federal government, and do it at the same time, not necessarily fulfilling the promises that he made. We have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene pushing to oust him because he's not holding up to his promises. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it understandable? What's your take on this right now going into election year?
My take is that, you know, I understand the frustration, but the greater evil is the Democrat Party, and we have to show as a conservative Republican Party that we can manage the government until the election. And I was very heartened when I heard a Donald Trump interview in which he mentioned, well, Marjorie Taylor Greene is my dear friend, and that Mike Johnson is also my friend, and he's doing the best job he can. Donald Trump would not say that unless he was both sure of that, and he wanted to get a message to that wing of the Republican Party. Look, we need to just be calm and get to the election and not have a blow-up in Washington, which is visible to the whole nation because the Democrats will make it visible.
Yeah,
they'll put it on every news show.
Oh, they love it. They eat that stuff up.
They love it. They love the Republicans to seem the party of chaos, when in fact they are the party creating all the chaos.
Right.
So it's the greater evil, you know, and as Republicans, we believe in this country. Democrats do not. They honestly do not. What they care about is destroying it. So we really have a job on our hands.
We just got to ride through. We got a few months left before the election.
Yes.
We can ride through and make this happen. Richard, we got about 45 seconds left here, but this bill that's being discussed right now in the Senate, this foreign policy bill that passed to the House on Saturday, do you think this one's going to pass? And is it going to be an easy vote, do you think, for them? Are they going to ram this one through?
I think it will pass. I think there are provisions that should make conservatives happy, which are that the aid to Ukraine is taking the form of a loan. It comes with oversight by the United States Congress. It comes with assets that back it up in the form of rare earth minerals and other resources, and that's rather unprecedented. There is aid to Israel that is not also tied to an equal amount of aid to Hamas, which is just feeding the terrorists, which is what the Democrats would like to do again.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot to like, and as you said just a couple of minutes ago, Andy, Speaker Johnson has crafted this in a unique way, so that we are actually getting some things that are good coming out of it.
He's done a great job in the process, the process to
very
debate these.
Job.
Yeah, to be able to craft it, to debate it, to discuss it, to add amendments and to tweak things. He's done an amazing job on that. The only stickler many conservatives have is where's the immigration part of this that he promised, and I think that's where we're at. Richard, it's so good to talk to you, my friend. We got to do this again real soon, brother.
Anytime, Andy. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Always appreciate the conversation. We'll do some more of that when we come back right around the corner, right here on The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. What? Welcome back to it. Hold on here. Oh, there we go. All right. Almost couldn't hear myself for just a moment. Hey, welcome back into the show. So great to have you along for the ride today. It's a post-Monday celebration. Akash Shogali, Vice President of Americans for Prosperity, he'll be joining us here momentarily. We'll get him on the program and talk about the Republican Party, Bidenomics, and our stance on economic issues. Do me a favor as well while you're sitting here. Go to Bidenomics.com. Yeah, do it. It's okay. Go ahead. Go to Bidenomics.com. Go check it out. The Americans for Prosperity are great partners with us here on the show. They purchased the domain to Bidenomics.com. So when you go there, then you won't just see the Joe Biden, oh, look at investing in America and being able to spend all this money and look how great we're doing and all these jobs, the 15 million jobs that were created, right? It's not happening. It didn't happen, so you can just stop that lie. It's okay. I don't think people actually believe it, but that's what the Biden administration's running on because, well, they have nothing else to run on. So the true facts, the true numbers are actually there for you to check out at Bidenomics.com on the 20%+ inflation that we've seen over the past 3 years, the 30% inflation on food and on energy and on all these other industries that are killing us going into election year. Keep that in mind. We now have, I saw the average gas price in California right now is over $7 a gallon, correct? For those who are listening in California, you can send me a message and let me know whether that's actually true or not, but over $7 a gallon for average gas right now, over some places, even over the federal minimum wage, meaning it would take you more than a full hour on federal minimum wage for you to even just get a gallon of gas. And if that's unsustainable, if that's not unsustainable, then I don't know what it is. If that's not a terrible economy, then I don't know what is. If that's not a devastating inflation rate or a devastating economic policy from the Biden administration, I don't know what is. So you can try and tell us how great it is to invest in this and bail out that and do this. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Go to AmericansForProsperity.com. You can also go to ProsperityIsPossible.com, and you can see all the great information there. And, of course, Bidenomics.com, all of it with Americans for Prosperity. Great partners with us here on the radio show. Speaking of, there is some headlines that I find kind of interesting today.
What's trending today?
So I really wish if you could have a time machine, go back in time and do something a little bit different. There's a few things that I think all of us would go back in time to do. But for one of them, I think it would be to not take out all these student loans that I took out. Just throwing that out there. Now, I know that we could potentially have them forgiven. So hooray on that one, right? No. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I thought I was going to be having mine forgiven. Actually, mine are private student loans because I was like, oh, heck with the government. I'm going private. And then the private ones end up charging me like 15% interest rates on a $20,000 loan. You can see how well that one's going to get paid off anytime soon. Nonetheless, looking at student loans, I think there is an awakening. Now, I am eternally optimistic, you know, on this program. I am always optimistic about what the future may hold. Even though there's some really weird stuff going on, even though there's some crazy people out there, even though there's a lot of anger and a lot of hatred and a lot of stupid, I'm always the eternal optimist that we will pull our heads out of our you-know-whats one of these days and actually move in the right direction. Or maybe we still do, but it's the other side that's kicking and screaming and causing all the drama while we continue to actually progress in a positive manner. That's the way I go with it. That's what I'm going to stick to, and that's the positivity that I'm going to run with. There is a new study, or at least a new report that came out from the National College Attainment Network that does the FAFSA filings. Now, if you've ever done a FAFSA filing, you essentially have to create a FAFSA account for the federal government to apply for student federal aid. And they're the ones who keep track of all this information. I don't know what my FAFSA is. I haven't logged into it in forever. I'm just trying to pay off the crap that I signed up for all those years ago and was really stupid in actually doing. But the National College Attainment Network has released their latest report showing that only 37% of high school seniors by this point have actually signed up and applied for some sort of federal student aid going into the fall semester. Now, to put that into perspective, because you're like, Andy, that's still 37%. That's a lot. That is a lot of students. However, that is pretty dramatically down compared to previous years. Last year, by this time, the middle towards end of April, over 50% of high school seniors have applied for FAFSA or at least signed up for federal student aid in some way, applying or getting ready to apply for student loans. Now, the deadline is May 1st, apparently. So that deadline's coming up relatively quick. That's at the time where high schools start to graduate and students get to get ready for summertime and start planning on what their fall actually may look like going into higher education. Now, the headline from CNN, which is why I think this is hilarious, is that the headline makes them think that they are losing their minds, that the entire education system, the higher education system, is now going to collapse because so few students are actually applying for federal student aid. I know, right? Here's the headline from CNN. FAFSA filings are way down, raising fears that some students won't go to college in the fall. Oh, my dear. Oh, man. 37% of high school seniors at this time now have officially filed for federal student aid, down from 50% just last year. As that continues to dwindle, they say there's still time, but the panic button needs to be set that maybe, just maybe, students won't go to higher education, won't go to college in the fall.
Mm.
Now think about that for a minute. There's a few different reasons. The question would be, why? Right? That's the question that comes to my mind. Why would students not want to go to higher education in the fall? And obviously there's a few different reasons, right? Right now we have major protests going on. The most anti-Semitism that I've ever seen in my entire life, where students just don't want to deal with it. They might even not even be politically active. Maybe they're going to become a doctor or want to be an engineer or something, and they just don't want to deal with the garbage that they're seeing on campus. Could very well be. Maybe it's because of the rape culture that we're so taught about in school. Now, just about every male that's a quote-unquote alpha male or a drunken college student male that wants to pick up a chick or try to appeal to a female or try to get their attention in some way, maybe that rape culture is so bad now that students just don't want to go. Or maybe, just maybe, and this is where the eternal optimism comes, because those other arguments, I mean, the first one's, I guess, somewhat reasonable with the anti-Semitism and the agenda being forced down our throats. The second one's really stupid. The third one, however, is the fact that maybe, just maybe, we're realizing that we don't need to get in such ridiculous debt for such a quality of an education that may or may not benefit us later on down the road when it comes to our career. Maybe, just maybe, we're not seeing the value, and more people are starting to be aware of the value of what a college education is, and it's not to the point of where it needs to be to take out such ridiculous amounts of student loans that are being debated on whether they're going to be forgiven or not. You have to start paying them back, and the government's not able to do that, so therefore, I'm stuck with this stuff, and I'm starting to come to my senses that maybe I don't want to have that debt looming over me. Here's the kicker, according to the CNN Post, as that they're the most concerns about low-income and minority students that will not be able to afford enrolling in college. Now, again, just the headline from CNN and the first paragraph itself just comes to the assumption that every student in America has to go to college or else you're going to become a failure in society. You'll probably become like a truck driver or some type of trade school person, which I can't believe you'd actually want to work with your hands that way. And you'll probably become a Donald Trump supporter because of your low information and low education level. All that's implied on the first part of this whole CNN post, that filings are way down, raising fears that some students won't go to college in the fall. Why is there a fear of students not going to college in the fall? Is that a fearful thing? Well, they're not going to have a good life. Really? Because you can become a plumber and make probably more money than what I do on the radio. You can go and become an electrician, which there's a high demand for both of those industries, by the way, because no one wants to do those any longer. So you could make some pretty decent money. You can go and become a repairman, a handyman. You can work in construction. You can start a business. You can get into a trade. You can do whatever you want to. And all of that consists of not having to go to college and get into thousands upon thousands upon thousands of student loan debt. I've told you many times on the show, I'm very open about this on the program, that I've made so many stupid decisions in my life that right now I'm sitting on right about $50,000 of student loan debt. And that's down right now because I've been working really hard at it. When I first came out, I actually had more student loan debt than what the mortgage was on my first home that we purchased here in the Wichita, Kansas area about 12 years ago, 10 years ago. Because that was an $80,000 first-time home, I had $88,000 of student loan debt. And I've been able to work that down to about $50,000, and I'm on a really good trajectory right now to keep paying that off very quickly without, by the way, the federal government bailing that out for me, because the majority of it is private loans. Thank you, interest rates that are making it difficult to do that because it's at 15%. But I'm very open about that because that's an example of how stupid that I was. I was living in Colorado. I took out the student loans to go to Bowling Green State University in Ohio, so it was out-of-state tuition, and I took out the living expenses, and I did not get a job, and I continued to roll that in over year, over year, over year, until I couldn't afford it any longer. And by the way, that was only for 2 years of college before I went to the trade school, got into broadcasting. So that added up pretty quickly. And then I would do the bounce back and forth between I'm going to pay this one for a couple months while I defer this one, then I'm going to swap them and pay this one while this one's deferred. And the deferment just kept adding the interest because that was not the year. I'm almost getting back to like the actual original balance of my student loans. And all of that money that I've wasted paying on this garbage has been completely unnecessary. That's a trend that more people are waking up to, realizing that the young generation cannot afford to buy a home. They cannot afford to provide for a family or start a family. They cannot afford an entry-level position. They think that they're going to come out of college and make $100,000+ and they're going to pay this off in no time. That was my assumption. Everybody does it. Obviously, it's going to give me value. It's going to be totally awesome. There's no worry. I don't know why you guys are freaking out about this. That was my thought my senior year. And that's the thought of so many others. And now with this, I think this conversation, this negative, ridiculous conversation that we've had about student loan bailouts from the Biden administration has created a conversation for the younger generation in a positive manner to turn it around and realize, well, oh, I have to pay this back. Oh, that's a lot of money. Oh, look at the average medium income in this nation. Oh, that's going to be tough for me to live on while paying for these student loans. Maybe I should reevaluate something. The positive coming out of this, I like it.
Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into it. I told you, positivity, man. The eternal optimist here on the program where there's some really ridiculous, stupid things going on that brings to light some new stuff that's actually positive that turns society around a little bit. Just imagine if, now this could be pure speculation, maybe that's not the reason why we're seeing such a low application rate for federal student loans, and the media losing their minds, because remember, the universities that are state-run, therefore aka government-run, if they don't have enrollment numbers as high, they can't justify the amount of grants coming in, then they have to, here's what they do. They don't just start cutting programs, they just raise tuition rates even more, raising student loans even more, to where the government benefits, the government agencies benefit, the government departments, the student, the actual universities all benefit from this, and it only hurts you. So they're freaking out that there's only 37% of high school seniors right now that have applied for federal student aid going into the fall semester. That's still a lot of students around the country, but I think, hopefully, fingers crossed, fingers and toes crossed, I'm hoping that people are starting to wake up and realize it's not worth getting that far into debt for. So while we have been debating about federal student loan forgiveness, it's brought to light the conversation of young adults that are looking into their future, what they want to do, that maybe, just maybe, it's not worth the value for them to get into massive amounts of debt. Looking at my generation, for example, the millennials, that say, well, they can't buy homes, they can't start families, they can't afford anything. We have kids crying on video because they're working 80 hours a week and can't afford to just live with basic rent and food and everything else. It's because of that stuff's expensive thanks to inflation, thanks Democrats and big government spenders. But it's also because of the student loans where you just automatically wipe off $1,000 a month off of your income that's going towards that, taking away your ability to just function normally. And people don't want that. So I hope, I really hope that they're reevaluating their lives and that they're starting to change and that they're starting to actually do something about it and speak up. Kind of like a perfect example. Right now we see the political activism going on college campuses, the anti-Semitism that's going on, while AOC's out there saying that they're peaceful protests advocating for the decimation of the Jewish people, which, I mean, okay, I thought that was all done back after like World War II. I thought we were done hating on the Jews, but apparently not, and the anti-Semitism's there pretty dramatically. The Muslim populations that the Democrats are desperately trying to win over right now are torn on how they respond to these issues. Now, not necessarily torn on disliking Joe Biden, because they all despise Joe Biden, which is why, especially in Michigan and in Montana right now, we're seeing Minnesota, we're seeing a massive withdrawal from the Muslim population to go out and vote and support the Democrats. But there's a different ways to do it. You can do it in the sense of death to America, which is what we're hearing from the Palestinians, which is what we're hearing from the Iranians, which is what we're hearing from some radicals around the world and even here in the United States. But they're starting to speak up there as well. There's an imam out of, which is, by the way, for those that don't know, that's the head of like the mosque in a local community. There's an individual that is the imam of the Islamic House of Wisdom out of Dearborn Heights, Michigan, who said he is very pro-American. He's been fighting and speaking up against the Death to America crowd protesting, saying, yeah, we're frustrated with the Biden administration on how they're handling issues, but America is still the greatest place ever, and we can't be advocating for this type of violent rhetoric.
Absolutely, 100%. I heard about it. By the way, it was just like a few people who initiated that slogan. And I talk against it publicly. I talk against it in Friday prayer. As a matter of fact, I saw one of the individuals that I had seen. I was not there. I was not in the rally. But one of the individuals who were saying it loudly, I talked with him, and I expressed my disappointment because we are not for death. We are for life. We are for love. We are for peace and justice.
All right, that audio from Fox News with his interview, speaking out against some of those Death to America protesters that have been happening and saying, yeah, we have our issues with the Biden administration. We have our issues with how we're handling foreign policy. According to him, he's had an issue with just about both sides of the political aisle for decades on foreign policy issues, and that's totally fine. You can have that opinion. But to call for death to America when you live in the nation, and death to the Jewish community and death to Israel when they're a strong ally and you're for love and acceptance and working with everybody. If that's the case, guess what? The Muslim community now even beginning to stand up and speak against this and pushing back against the hateful rhetoric. When negative things begin to creep out into society and it's frustrating and it's angering and it's hateful and it's horrible and it's stupid and it's low information and it's low IQ, guess what? The good side begins to rise up and actually speak out. They end up changing things, and they end up becoming that voice of reason, and hopefully more will continue to do that. Back at it again tomorrow for the middle of the week. Until then, everybody enjoy. We'll see you on the radio.